Hello and welcome to the Jazz Podcast. My name is Tara Minton and today we are going to listen to an interview between Rob Cope and Daniel Bennett. He's an American saxophonist and leader of the Daniel Bennett Group. Their music has been described as a mix of modern jazz and avant pop. In 2021, the group released an album titled New York Nerve. And we're going to listen now to the opening track of that album called Television. Enjoy.
Mr. Daniel Bennett, welcome back to the Jazz Podcast. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's a nice snowy day here in New York City. It's good to be back. I think we spoke about maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah, I wonder when your show was. I'm going to secretly look it up in the background because this is your second visit on the Jazz Podcast. Thank you so much for coming back.
Yeah, it's good to be back. And you, as we talked about before the show, you are a busy man, like interviewing every single musician on the planet, and you're performing full time. So like, hats off to you, man.
That's very kind of you. It's my it's going to be like a career long project. This is my long term view for it, that we'll have, you know, easily, I hope, over 1,000 episodes, and then we can create a sort of archive. Every show is archived in the British Library, an oral history of jazz, they call it. So
is it really?
Yeah, so one day it's very a day of great relief for me, that if ever, like, long after I'm gone, my bank accounts are gone and there's nobody to pay the hosting, all of these episodes will be preserved and cared for forever, and people in hundreds and hundreds of years could research you and what life was like in New York, like today, you know, in 2022. So 23.
That's amazing. So there's actually like a third party, like holding these, the audio, like hosting the audio, essentially.
Like basically the British government, like the National British Library. It's sort of like our Smithsonian, if you like. So they hold them digitally, but yes, there's an archive. So anyone can go online and, access them. So that's really
cool.
Great. So welcome, listeners of the future, to this episode. Also, I put a neck strap on just before we started, which doesn't bode well.
A neck strap, you said?
You know, like for the sax, like a sling. I like sat down, headphones, sling. I was like, ready to.
I love this, you know, because your listeners can't actually see you, Rob. You are holding a saxophone neck strap in your hand, and that is like the mark of an actual saxophone player. I love that.
Yeah, no, don't worry about me like posing saxes behind and making it look good. No, I've got all these silly accessories within hand's reach, all of which.
Listen, that's the internet now, because every single possible saxophone problem, even problems that we didn't think existed, they have a category and they have products that they can sell us at the NAMM show in LA or wherever. I'm sure London has some kind of instrument accessories trade show where you can just buy anything under the sun related to the saxophone. So it's good.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that you don't need. My biggest pet hate is this big fluffy stick that you put down.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I'm like,
do you have one of those? You use those?
No, never. I'm just not into them. I'm not sure they're doing anything good.
I remember my teacher in fifth grade got me one of those. And she said, look, it's kind of fluffy and probably all the little fluff is going to come up into the saxophone. And you'll probably like throw this thing in the trash after a year. But I used it for a while, but I don't use it either. I have a swab that I use, and you know I'm friends with the Key Leaves guys. I have not gotten Key Leaves yet. There's so many products. I'm not a gearhead. I have one. I use what works for me. I do endorse Morgan Mouthpieces. It's a great company based in Ohio. But I don't. I'm not a huge gearhead. I don't hang out in music stores. I use what works for me, and that's it.
The endorsement with Morgan, did they approach you, or had you already tried their mouthpieces before?
I had been talking about them online quite a bit, and then they reached out to me and said, wow, this is really cool. We appreciate that you're sharing our product, and can we partner? It's a great company, and it's handcrafted mouthpieces. I mean, they're available worldwide. And of course, Ralph Morgan used to work for the Selmer company, saxophone company, way, way back in the day. And then he kind of got bored over there and went and made his own hard rubber mouthpieces. And they still have the original molds that Morgan used back in the 50s that they still use in the factory. And I'm not speaking of geeking out. They also have end plugs that are made, I believe they're actually made of cork and ebonite from the Selmer factory. That Morgan brought with him. He had all sorts of scrap and junk that he just sort of kept over the years, and it made him into these like high-end end plugs. I'm not sure if that's a real thing, a high-end end plug. I mean, because really, it's just a little round cap you stick in the top of your saxophone. You don't even think about it. But I have one. They sent me some of their high-end ebonite, you know, Ralph Morgan specials. I think it came from some Selmer clarinet, you know, 100 years ago, and they made it into end plug. So they have everything for everyone.
Wow. You know, that's amazing. I've done quite the opposite with my Barry sax. I have a piece of, there's a famous racing driver called Jenson Button. He was the Formula One world champion in 2009. I have a square of Jenson's race suit acting as a pad against my low A key on the Barry because it fell off. And I was like, this little like Kevlar fireproof, it's perfect. It's the perfect width. And I like to sort of customize. There's a guy well-known here called Ian Ballamy who has a like a glass eye stuck to his tenor under the octave key. And it looks like it's looking at you. It's really scary. Caught my eye on a gig once. And I was like, oh man, that's really.
I love that. You know, Rob, you could really monetize your race car cloth, man. You should put that on Instagram. I'll buy one.
Yeah,
you can count on me.
I went to the McLaren factory with my friend Jack, and they were giving them out as like a souvenir of the day. You know, it's like a 1 centimeter squared cube of race suit. Somebody chopped this suit up, you know, to 1,000 pieces. Crazy job. And anyway, I just looked at it and I thought there's a use for that, you know. Question for you. What are key leaves?
The key leaves are these really cool looking products. Now, look, I'm going to sound really like out of it because, again, I'm not a gearhead, but maybe that's why I'm a good spokesman for anything. Because if I find it interesting, I mean, because I don't really pay attention to a lot of gear. But I do think the key leaves are pretty cool looking. They're essentially a windy, they look like leaves, like ivy green leaves. I think they're made of plastic. And they wrap all around the saxophone. And they're meant to go under the pads that close and that stick, you know, the G-sharp key. And it's meant to prop open certain notes and certain keys. If the key leaves people are listening, I'm sorry if I'm like completely screwing up the pitch here. But I do think they're very cool. I think they're very, very cool. Yeah. And Rulon, the guy who runs the company, he's a great guy. And he's really artist friendly. So I do love what they do. So yeah, if you look for him on Instagram, you'll find maybe a million posts of horn players with key leaves. And I don't know, man. I have a friend who a couple of years ago bought one of those saxophone mutes, which sounds great because a trumpet mute, you put it in the bell, but a saxophone mute, I'm just riffing here. A saxophone mute is essentially an enormous, looks like a case that you put the horn in. You've probably seen pictures of this. And then
I've tried one. We have one in London at Dorks and Haworths. I don't own one, but man, what a piece of trash. I tried it and I was like, this feels horrible.
Okay, so tell me if I'm wrong. It looks like a giant case that fits around the horn. Am I right?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's ridiculous. It's not very practical.
And inside of it, no, it's massive. On the inside are microphones, and you slot your hands in as if you're on a spacewalk or like working in a nuclear plant. And then you put headphones on so that the mics pick up the sound, play it into your ears. But it's got extra resistance because the air's got nowhere to go. So
yeah.
It's just by the time you've done all that to keep the noise down, it just doesn't feel like you're playing a sax. It's so cumbersome and weird.
Yeah. And you could have just played mezzo piano. Am I right?
It's as if people like these people cannot play quiet. It's so loud. There's no solution other than this case. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Well, hopefully the sax mute people aren't listening because we've just made a lot of enemies.
Yeah.
So I have also found our last podcast. It was the 30th of November, 2019.
Yes.
It was probably a different world.
And it was probably a month before we went over to play at Ronnie Scott's.
It was just after it.
Or just after the Ronnie Scott show. There you go. There you go. And we had released an album called We Are the Orchestra. Oh, look at this.
Yeah.
Well, you got it in your notes.
Yeah, I found it here.
You know, for your listeners, because they can't see, we're on Zoom. I can see everything. I can look right into Rob's house or your studio. He is very organized. I see. He's got notes and he's got iPads and phones and gadgets. He's got a neck strap on. He's got headphones. Well, this is a good visual element. I listen to a lot of podcasts. You don't always get the visual of what's happening.
Yeah.
In each, you know, to each with the visual of it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't write down questions because then you don't listen to the guest and you end up asking something that's not relevant. But all too often, without enough notes, I just wound up looking really stupid every show because, you know, you're like you're interviewing a guest and you're like, what was your album called? When's it released? There's loads of episodes like that. I've learned my lesson slowly.
Well, you know, I've made a career out of looking stupid and trying, as I tell people, you know, you just got to fail with style, Rob. You got to try everything and fail with style. That's the part, you know, that's part of being an artist. I mean, you know, we put the good stuff online, right? Now, everyone sees all the bells and whistles and the glitz, but behind the scenes, we're all kind of like, you know, frantically getting things done in our apartment and we're like half dressed and we're trying to answer emails and phone calls and we're booking flights. And, you know, for me, I've been traveling to Florida every month. We do this tour residency in Florida every month. So my booking manager has been hounding me with dates and publicists and all sorts of stuff that goes on. But, you know, getting back to Ronnie Scott's, that was a fun interview with you. And I appreciate you having us, me on your show. I feel like this closeness to the UK through you, through Sammy Stein, who's a great writer, and some of the other jazz critics and media people in the UK. So I feel like this connection with you guys.
Yeah, well, we love to be connected because I feel like we're in the middle ground between the US and between Europe and this little place in the middle where you can kind of go both ways and see what's going on.
Yep.
Poke our head out from above the Brexit walls to be like, oh, what are you guys up to? Please come back. Please come back. Let's talk about your new album. So we've started the show with the track Television. Tell us things.
Television. I mean, I love old TV show themes. I love Mike Post, who wrote a lot of music for TV shows in the 80s, Magnum PI, Law and Order, all these like classic shows. I think he did Hawaii Five-O. But so I'm really into that, like, really upbeat pop sound. But obviously my music, it changes keys a lot. And it kind of has to, so that I can do something with the songs on the saxophone. You know, if I had it my way, I would probably just write these tunes in one key, but I want to have some kind of vehicle so I can blow on the saxophone too. So television's very upbeat and a lot of overdubs. We recorded it in June of 2020. We were actually the first jazz group that I know of in New York City to hit the studios. Because, I mean, we literally, when studios opened, I think it was the next day, my producer wrote me and asked me if we wanted to come in and record. I said, of course, let's go. We had already been scheduled to record in March of 2020. That didn't happen. So we went in June, at the end of June, and we were hungry to record. And the album has a lot of raw energy. Our sound is different every song, and it's so hard to describe it, Rob, because like this song's really edgy, really like pop and upbeat. But we have a soft kind of folk sound. We tap into classical sounds. We tap into world music. It's like kind of impossible from one song to the next. And I double on flute and clarinet. You're a doubler, right? You do kind of everything.
I am. Yeah. I have got down here my bass clarinet just behaving itself throughout. But yeah, I can't double without practicing them because I'm not that smart. You know, they're like constant. I always think of it like juggling. One's on the way up while another one's plummeting back down again.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's a great interview with Miles Davis where he says, the secret to playing any instrument is to pretend you're spitting rice out of your lips. And as silly as that sounds, when I switch to flute, especially, and I just pretend I'm spitting rice out of my lips, I can get the flute embouchure really fast. But I'm like you. Yeah, I'm always suffering through doubling, trying to make the horn feel like it's my main horn. Of course, you know, truth be told, my biggest pet peeve, Rob, is when people come up to me after a concert and say, oh, we really enjoyed the music. Is flute your main instrument? And I, like theater doublers would love that. That's kind of like a good thing. But you know, I'm a saxophonist at heart. I'm an artist. I'm a band leader. I want to be a saxophone player. So when people say, is flute your main instrument? I'm always like, oh man, I gotta like get home and practice the saxophone a little bit more. So you can't win, man, as a doubler. You really can't. I'm sure you feel this too. It's like, you know, you're just, I think we're all aiming too high to try to like master all of these instruments.
Yeah, I'm exactly like you. If someone like calls me the other day, someone referred to me as a sax player and I was like offended, even though I am. I was like, what about a clarinet? What do you mean?
Yeah, no, exactly.
So irrational.
You can't win. And
No, you go for it.
Oh, you were going to show me something cool.
I was, your album cover.
He's holding up the album cover for your listeners. Yeah. And that album cover was, we took a photo in about 5 minutes on the roof of the studio on the Lower East Side in New York City, a studio called East Side Sound. And we actually had a gig that night. We had a concert at Tomi Jazz, which is a great club in Midtown Manhattan that I play at every week. And they were doing outside music. So we were on their outside music series every single week. So we did the album in about 6 hours, raced upstairs. We had a photographer, took photos on the roof, and then I jumped in. We all jumped in the cab and went and played the show. So that, thankfully, we got one really nice photo.
Wow. It's an amazing photo. It's a great location. The color, the pop of it, the size of the writing. It's called New York Verve, this album. If our listeners want to Google it, Daniel Bennett Group, a cracking photo. And the leaves, the buildings, the whole like the whole like contradiction of New York is in there. It's brilliant.
Yeah. Did New York say... Nerve. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I just can't read. New York Nerve.
Well, that's okay. You know, I'm not all that against you.
So I've got the notes. I just can't read them.
And actually, the album, well, that's okay. You know, as long as you can use your ears and play music, which you do. The more I play music, the less I read, too. My kids read. You have two kids, right?
One at the moment.
Kid?
Hopefully it will stay as one.
You got one. Okay, let's leave it at once. So my kids loved it. I'm sure you have a boy?
A girl.
You have a girl. Okay. Does she like to read books, picture books? And
absolutely cannot get enough of reading books. I've been at the library with her today.
Okay, good. See, I'm going to riff on this for a second because I just said we don't like, you know, old guys don't like to read, right? We get older, we don't want to read. But kids love to read. And now I'm reading with my kids, and I'm reading the Hardy Boys to my son, Hudson. And I'm like, wow, reading is really fun. So I need to get back into that. When I have a few moments, I need to find some books that I can read on my own. Kids' books are fun, but yeah, reading is fun.
Yeah, Evie loves to read. She's always pulling things out. She likes the sound books where you press the button. She's one. You press the button and it makes a sound. Turn the page and it's like the badger walked through the snow. You press the button. And then I tried to read her some Philip Pullman today, The Amber Spyglass. And it's like, yeah, that book's for like my age. I think I read like three or four words and she's like, boring. So yeah, I need to do what you say. Read some books on my own time.
You know, picture books, I think jazz musicians can deal with. I think picture books would be a good fit for most of us. Yeah, now that I think about it.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. Yeah. Did you say you did the album in 6 hours?
We did it in 6 hours. We started at 11 a.m. and we played until 5 p.m. I still remember this because the concert that night was at 8 p.m. We did it in 6 hours. I did come back to overdub all of the keyboard lines. So there's a quartet on the album. Drum, saxophone, bass, and guitar. And then I added keyboard. And I did layer a few background lines on various wind instruments. My producer, her name is MP Kuo. She's a great producer and a saxophonist. So she knows wind instruments. So she can really, really keep you in line. She has a great ear. She knows when it's in tune. So she helps craft a lot of our arrangements for the record. I always try to get, this is our 9th studio album, and I really try to get other people to help with input. I don't want to run the show. I'm pretty open-minded. I don't really give a lot of instructions. And I'll tell you this too, Rob. I have to play a song probably 1,000 times in public before I would ever even think about recording it. I just want the song to be so loose that we can just play the thing quickly. Like I mentioned earlier, we were on tour a lot, and we'll be back in the UK probably in the fall, but that's a whole other story. But I mean, we've been going down to Florida every month performing, at various festivals and, museums and libraries, music events, concert series. And I have like probably a dozen new songs that I just want to play 1,000 times before we make our next album. So this is part of my strategy here, is to like get so loose that the songs sound are ready to go. When I hit the studio, I can do it in 6 hours. That's the goal.
That's amazing. That's so also practical with the cost of recording and the time of the members of the band and everything.
Yeah, you have to be, it's all about economics nowadays. And of course, I travel as a trio. So, you know, people always ask me, how do we make it happen as a trio? You have to be smart. So we're all doubling. I play flute, sax, clarinet, a little bit of oboe. My drummer, Coco Bermejo, actually plays drums and keyboard at the same time.
Wow. That's amazing.
That's insane. So if you look him up online, look up Coco Bermejo, or just look up my group on YouTube, and you'll see he's doing both. He's like a one-man band, playing keyboard with left hand and drums with his right hand. And then Kevin Haley on electric bass, and Kevin plays with a lot of pedals and he's looping. We have to create a lot of sound. It's gutsy. It's not, look, in the old days, we would make a lot, but we still make mistakes. What am I talking about? We still make a lot of mistakes, but we've learned to craft our sound in such a way that it's got the energy and there's only three of us doing this. So we change styles a lot. I'm changing instruments a lot. And this also can be a problem because when people review the group, they might review us as if we're like, as if I'm a flute player or a clarinet player or whatever. Or they might listen to the track Television and they think that we're going to sound a little bit like pop. But really, every song is so different. It's really hard to describe it. And, you know, I always encourage people, just check out full concerts of us online. Just look up Daniel Bennett Group. We just did our album release at the Blue Note in New York City. And we actually did two shows that were both recorded and are broadcast on YouTube, on our YouTube channel. So you can like hear, they're both very different, both concerts. And you can kind of hear the, and see the arc of what we're doing on stage. So
it's a really strange compulsion that we fight against, with people reviewing it, let's say, from the perspective of like, what is this thing? What is this music? As opposed to just being able to like let it all happen and have a very open mind. I'm trying to be fair here and not just sort of be like throwing all the reviewers I know under the bus. But my last album was quite like avant-garde, with lots of like really weird and spoken word and space things. And some of it's like, it's hard to describe it in like two or three words, you know, which means a lot. I think it's harder to get reviews for something like that because it doesn't immediately conform to like, oh, it's a bebop album.
Yeah.
Are you finding that with your project? Because it's unlike anything else that's out there, which is, by the way, an amazing feature of it.
It's not easy to market this stuff. Putting videos online, I'm very active on social media, and like one video can sound like one really distinct style. And I'm like, well, there's a million other things that happened in this concert, and people's attention span is about 5 seconds. They just want to hear something quickly. And they're like, well, this is not the full picture of what we're doing. But at the same time, we do it every night. We perform almost every night. And I over time, I think people do get an idea of who you are. Which I appreciate. Time Out New York did a feature on the group. That's a newspaper, and London has a Time Out. I think there's a
we
London
do
Time
have
Out.
One, yeah.
Okay, so there you go. So Time Out New York featured us during the pandemic, and they were just talking about because we played over 100 outdoor concerts, and we did probably close to 50 live stream concerts.
And you were playing on the roof a lot and practicing outside.
Yeah, my rooftop videos. So I play on the roof and you know, it's funny. I posted this recently, a clip. I was playing Daydream Believer by the Monkees, just a pop tune. I shouldn't say just a pop tune. It's a great song. It's an amazing melody. And I was playing it on my clarinet, and Mickey Dolenz retweeted it. You know, I think he's the last living Monkee. He was the drummer in the Monkees. So That rooftop video got a lot of hits, and people kind of were like asking, like, why are you playing this? You know, like, what made you play the Monkees or what? And I was like, especially during the pandemic, it was like every minute I was playing something different. It was like Joni Mitchell. It was like avant-garde stuff. I was like thrashing away on any instrument I could get my hands on, because that's kind of what we all did. We got onto our roof. We did anything we could, and it worked. I mean, if you stuck with it, and just like you did, you were podcasting and you stuck with it, you know, it really served the public really well. I think the artists, if you were smart during COVID, you could really serve the public with your music. And so that's what we did. That's what we did during 2020. And so the rooftop, we probably did about 20 or 30 rooftop. We did little concerts on my roof. We did, you know, anything. I had like neighbors who would come up and you know, just listen. So, you know, whatever you could do. I live on the Upper East Side in New York City in Manhattan. So it's pretty easy to be heard on the roof of my building. I mean, I remember I would play, and there's high rises. There's like high rises all around me, and I could see people looking out their window at me, which was kind of weird, but you know, whatever. I don't think anyone, I didn't care at that point during the pandemic. So yeah, it was a wild time. I mean, you know, we broke pretty much any rule we could break just to get our music out there. Mm. We were pushing stuff online. We did live stream, and our live stream concerts were for actual venues. We teamed up with museums and libraries all over the country. Many who had funding, who had to use their money in the fiscal year and pay someone to play. So I said, well, let's do a live stream concert. So we actually were able to book essentially professional live stream engagements with venues and get paid. And we only did that as a duo. We did that at Coco's studio in New Jersey, actually. And you know, that's how we did it. And from that, I think New York Nerve was born. So amazing what can happen from catastrophe. You know?
Yeah, the like pent up sort of emotion and frustration of not being able to be in front of an audience anymore. I think it's created a lot of new music in the couple of years since.
Yeah, and we found people who were willing to host us. We actually played, we did a 3-night residency in San Francisco at the beginning of 2021 when things were still really upside down. And, you know, live music was happening in San Francisco, but there were all sorts of restrictions. And most musicians weren't even attempting to book gigs. But I got in touch with this venue, Zingari, which is a great club in Union Square, San Francisco. I've played it there over the years, and I know the owner. And he said, yeah, we're doing live music, man. I mean, if you guys can get out here and we can set up a good arrangement financially. And I said, just, we'll figure it out. Let's just make it happen. So there were, I'm sure you felt this too. There were people who were willing to kind of make a way for you. If you kind of stuck your neck out there and looked for opportunities. So it's all good.
Yeah. And here we are with your, I tell you what, let's talk then about another new track. So Human Playback, we're going to finish the show with this tune, but tell us a bit about it. And another question I have for you before I stop is, how much of this is notated and how much of it, like when you're writing and the whole process of creating these tunes, bearing in mind how many overdubs there are, how do you go about it?
Well, here's the funny thing. I compose all of my music from the guitar, believe it or not. I've been a guitar player since I was in high school. I strum chords on my guitar and I sing melodies. And if the melody sticks in my head quickly, then I know that it's going to work. And then I transfer it to my saxophone. So that's how it's done. The melodies of the songs are written. The chords are completely through composed. And then we improvise over the songs. You know, so it's very different. I sometimes I feel misunderstood because I do come from a jazz background. I just recently took on a job leading the jazz program at the Bloomingdale School of Music on the Upper West Side of New York City. And we're playing almost all just straight ahead jazz. But as a composer, I don't identify with that stuff. Oddly enough, I just have always kind of done it my own way. So the songs are kind of like little, well, I don't know, like pop songs almost, but they change keys a lot. I mean, every phrase could be a new key. And I really just do that to help me to give myself a chance to improvise and do some interesting things on a horn. But I compose from the guitar. So I've never composed a piece from the piano. I actually teach a lot of arranging at the New York Jazz Academy in Times Square, jazz piano, and arranging chord voicings. I do a lot of piano work, but I don't compose from the piano. I've never written a song using a piano. I don't know. How do you write your songs? Because everyone's different. I mean,
yeah, I used to make that, I would call it a mistake for me, to sit at the piano as if that was like the right thing to do. Now I voice memos everything. I just play and I just record it in, but I'll like improvise something that I intend to compose. I'll sort of have a melody in my mind and I'll just play bass note, melody, and then sit down and transcribe what I've done and notate it that way. So I sort of started this year properly getting away from the piano, getting onto the instruments where I could express myself properly, quickly, and then write it out. And I usually write like start to finish like an hour or two. Like I'll write as fast as I possibly can before I get distracted and lose the workflow. I'm not very good at picking it up again later, you know?
Yeah. I mean, working quick is when you have to, you got a 1-year-old.
Yeah, it's nap time. I've got 1 hour, 2 hours a day.
You got 1 hour, man. Yeah, nap time. Use that time wisely. I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
I'm getting as much work done as I did before. I'm just doing it in a much more, it's helped focus my mind.
Yes. Work fast. What do they say? Work smart, work fast, something like that. But it's all true. I mean, you have to, look, nobody has time to spend 12 hours a day composing. Especially as a performer. I mean, I'm a band leader at heart. What I do is I perform and I improvise. You know, something I've been doing recently is performing with improv comedians in New York City. That's another trip, playing improvised musicals with various.
That sounds incredible.
Yeah. So I did this. There's a company called Blank, the musical called Blank, because the show is a blank slate and the audience creates
a show. Yeah, I've heard about these shows. Yeah.
Yeah, they make a show using an app. They punch in all these, it's like musical Mad Libs. The audience is creating a show on their phone and then it spits it into an algorithm and we have to basically come up with a show centered around all of these themes and ideas that the audience came up with. So I can tell you, I think I've learned more from improv comedians than I have from jazz people at times, because they have to get up in front of an audience and be funny and make it up and be funny immediately. And that is not easy. I think there's some wiggle room with jazz. You can kind of like work your way into a solo, but improvised comedy, man, it's wild. I'm sure in London, I mean, there's a huge theater scene. I'm sure they have that there as well.
I play Human Playback, what I'll end with is to say that what I love about your music is how original it is. I feel like jazz is supposed to be that way. You're supposed to push the boundaries, do new things. I'm not sure it's going to help anyone if we all just write like bebop heads and swing tunes and stay in that world forever, because that's not what was happening when that music was originally created. It was something new and weird and different. And now, you know, so I'm a huge congratulations to you on your new album, New York Nerve. And... and this track that we shall check out now, Human Playback, Daniel Bennett, thank you so much for coming back on the Jazz Podcast a second time. I've loved every second. I'm sure the listeners have too.
Thank you, Rob. Great to be here.